As soon as Amber's ready.
It looks like poison ivy.
Okay, I'm going to call tonight's special informational meeting on the proposed 2023 budget to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance and remain standing for a moment of silent meditation. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Roll call. Bartels.
Here.
Cahill.
Here.
Corcoran.
Here.
Criswell.
Here.
Erner.
Here.
Fabiano. Gavaris. Green.
Here.
Hansett.
Here.
Heppner. Hewitt.
Here.
Levine.
Here.
Litz. Lopez. Maloney.
Here.
Nolan.
Here.
Petit.
Here.
Roberts. Ronk, Sperry, Stewart, Uchitel, and Walter.
Here.
There are 18 present and 5 absent. As always, the fire evacuation plan is to please note that in events of emergency, the fire department has requested that legislators and all others move at least one block away from the county office building in order not to impede the firefighters in their duties. Thank you. Capital markets advisors, the legislature's budget analysts, will now present their analysis of the 2023 executive budget. It'll be up on the screen. When we're through, I'll come back up to facilitate questions.
Good evening. I can jump in and start us off here. We do have an associate of ours, Tom Vazakis, who's going to be joining very shortly in person. I just spoke with Tom, and I know he's in the building and he's on his way up right now. But in the interest of time, I will I can start off. And first off, would like to thank everybody for taking the opportunity to meet with us this evening. I know it was a bit difficult. Our intention was to have our full team there in person this evening. Unfortunately, a couple members of our team have COVID, so we had to do this kind of a cross between the two worlds, virtual and in person. So I thank everybody for the accommodations this evening, and we've enjoyed this process that we have the last couple of years. If we can just go to the next slide. So our role in this process was to provide an analysis and review of the 2023 proposed budget of the county, the executive budget. This is our third analysis of the budget. We've done this through our strategic consulting group. There's a number of team members on our side who are involved in that. Myself, James Nyko, is one of the day-to-day contacts for the county. Our partner, Margaret Guarino, who is on the call today, she's one of the folks, unfortunately, who has COVID, so she doesn't have her camera on, but she's here joining us. She's the managing
director. Yes, my apologies. I'm so sorry.
Hi, Margaret.
For not being there.
We have Tom Vazakis, who is the vice president. He will be joining very shortly, followed by Len Bernard on the call in the middle of the screen here, who is a consultant to Capital Market Advisors. And on the far right of our screen is Jack Anito, who is very helpful throughout this analysis. We're working very closely on the side of the county was Amber Feaster and Natalie Kelder. We can go to the next slide, please. Thank you. So in reviewing the budget, there's a few focal points that we wanted to make sure that we covered. And you'll see in the hard copy print version of our report, these are generally basically the primary sections of that report. So section one would be the status of prior recommendations, as I'd mentioned. This is our third review of the budget. So we wanted to look at where are the standing of prior year recommendations, both for 2021 and 2022. There's a section involving the budget practices and the processes of the county, and we wanted to make sure that we're looking at presentation of the book, the process that everybody goes through, to to adopt the budget, and, you know, kind of everything involving that. There's a section specific to revenues, section specific to expenditures. We always look at budgetary variances. We want to see, you know, looking at a trend analysis kind of year over year, what areas of the budget are performing favorably versus those which are performing perhaps negatively. It's, you know, kind of an important part. You want to see kind of where you're hitting the mark in prior years with the budget, and then that can translate into, you know, current year. We look at fund balance, the levels of your rainy day
fund. Excuse us, James. Your friend Tom has arrived.
Okay. Hey, Tom, how are you? So I think perhaps after this slide, I will I'll turn the presentation over to Tom, but we'll give him a second to get comfortable. So I'll continue, you know, kind of going just through this slide. There's a section of the report which discusses fund balance. You know, we look at primarily the general fund, obviously, but we do an analysis kind of each of the other funds. That includes, you know, a couple different things. There's a trend analysis in there where we're looking at, you know, kind of year over year. We want to see, you know, the types of fund balances that are growing versus those that may be declining. And then we also look at how fund balance is utilized for the budget, you know, in terms of appropriations in the budget. There's a section that's specific to indebtedness and capital improvement planning. Those are kind of melded together, but in that section they are kind of, you know, they are broken out a bit as well. There's a section for efficiency strategies. Again, you know, maybe not as closely linked to the budget, but particularly in this year where you're going to see, you know, throughout our discussions today that there's some, you know, forecasted, you know, poor economic conditions on the horizon. It's important to look at efficiency strategies and kind of say, all right, well, we know we may need to do some things where we could save some money. These are just some general ideas and some thoughts that we've seen, you know, kind of implemented by other jurisdictions. So we always want to make sure that we point them out. On a secondary level, you'll see in the appendix of our report, there's a listing of each of the departments that we had the opportunity and pleasure to sit down and meet with. When we conduct these reviews, this is our third time, you know, kind of going through and meeting with the department heads. We like to schedule, you know, Zoom interviews with them or virtual meetings just to have some conversations with the key people in those departments to get a better understanding of some of the information that's kind of behind the numbers. It gives you a different perspective. You know, in those conversations with the department heads, we like to kind of, you know, at this point now it's more of an update, but it provides us with kind of an idea as to where are they year to date in 2022, what were some of the driving factors, you know, what brought them to the point that they are now, and how is that impacting their decisions then moving into, you know, 2023, both on the operations side and on the financial side. And again, you know, kind of the point here is it gives us just kind of that background information that you might not get just from looking at the raw numbers in the budget document itself. So, you know, we think it's a very valuable, you know, part of our analysis. There's also a section in the appendix which provides some demographic and socioeconomic environmental information. There's, you know, basically to the census data, discussion of, you know, some of the local businesses and, you know, what are kind of some of the driving factors behind outside of the county itself, you know, and the operations administration, you know, what are some of those factors, you know, that are present. So we have a full section that discusses that. And with that, I will now turn it over to Tom, who I know is there in person.
Thanks, James. And good afternoon, everyone. I just want to apologize for being late. James, thank you for getting us started. To continue on, when we're doing our analysis, there's a number of things that we like to look at, both obviously starting with the county's proposed budget, but also past financials of the county, audited, unaudited financial statements, any council resolutions, press releases, things that are going on within the county. Benchmarking analysis, we always want to look at what your peers are doing to make sure things are in line with what we would expect for the county, as well as best practices from institutions like the GFOA, Government Finances Officers Associations, and other state and federal industry guidelines. As well as James started to describe some intangible documents and reviews, we always like to get a sense of what's going on the operations side of the county departments. We like to sit down with the department heads to put some context to the numbers that we're looking at. Again, we reach out to your peer jurisdictions, cities, counties, within the state. We do a lot of work with other municipalities around the state that give us a good sense of what to expect. And then any literature or research that we come across that might be relevant. And our last consideration goes to any outside factors, primarily economic conditions going on that are outside the county's control. Obviously, when we started here 2 years ago, the big concern was how the pandemic was going to influence the coming fiscal year and how that's progressed. Now we've started to move past that, and there are new economic conditions to take into consideration, most importantly, extreme inflationary concerns, as well as the possibility of a pending recession. The Fed, again, increased its interest rate just this afternoon. So that's something we like to take into consideration when we're looking at the budget and trying to figure out what to expect in the coming year, what we want to make you all aware of when you're looking at the budget, and what merits consideration. So typically when we do these types of analyses, one thing we like to do at the start is a trend analysis. So looking at historical data, what the county has done in the past, how that's been influenced by what we would expect, and how we can use that to figure out what to expect going forward. Again, benchmarking analysis, where are your peers, what are they expecting, what are they experiencing in terms of economic conditions, and what they're projecting. And then budget variance analysis. How have prior budgets of the county related to actual results at the end of the fiscal year? So how closely were budgeted figures to what actually occurred as far as expenses and revenues, and how can that influence the coming budget when we're looking at that? So some things we wanted to highlight. Obviously, you all have a copy of the report that was shared earlier today that goes into greater detail, but we wanted to highlight some high-level items that we came across that we think merit consideration. So first, starting on the revenue side, obviously there's quite a bit of economic risk with inflation, with a potential recession on the horizon. So some significant and unknown factors that are frankly outside the county's control, but for which we think there could be contingencies put in place to protect against any worst case scenarios and if things do come in worse than realized. So the county's largest revenue stream is obviously sales tax. This is a pretty big concern of ours because it can be so volatile. And it is sensitive to any economic fluctuations. So what we did, we looked at where the county sales tax figures came in through the first three quarters of this year. So those are actual results. We tried to forecast what potential fourth quarter receipts would look like to get a sense of where this year is going to end up and how that might influence next year. So looking at all that, we came up with a projection of sales tax for the current fiscal year of about $163.8 million, which is a little bit less than the current proposed sales tax for the 23 budget of about $167 million, which we think is high. So with any recessionary concerns, obviously the concern is people will have less money to spend. They'll be tightening their wallet, they'll be spending less. So the projection that sales tax is going to continue to increase in spite of all that is, we think, optimistic and merits consideration for adjustment. So we would recommend limiting the sales tax projections to no more than what the county thinks is going to be for the current fiscal year. And to do that, we think it's important to do some additional analysis, additional projection on where the current fiscal year ends, to wait as long as possible to see where the current year numbers come in to make sure that we're not overestimating the sales tax figure for the coming fiscal year. Moving on to real property taxes. The state imposes a real property tax levy limit. The county has chosen to not increase sales of real property tax in prior years, and this year has actually decreased the property tax proposal by a little bit, which we think is appropriate, that it should be flat or declining for the coming fiscal year, for the same reasons we mentioned with sales tax. Inflationary concerns, recessionary concerns, that people may not be spending as much money, and we don't want to unduly burden them with additional property taxes, if at all possible. So we think that was actually appropriate. For state and federal aid, the county is obviously very reliant on state and federal aid for a number of services, and does a good job of acquiring those grants and being in touch with those state and federal agencies to make sure that those monies are coming in. Historically, state and federal aid have been about 25% to 30% of the county's total revenues. We saw going into the pandemic, or when the pandemic had begun, that the state was concerned about cutting its state aid to its local governments. So there is some possibility of risk there. If there are some concerns of a recession, that the state may cut back a bit, just something to be aware of and to make note. We thought, looking at the proposed budget, that the state and federal aid that was included was appropriate because it wasn't being increased significantly. Most grant levels were kept flat, so we thought that was appropriate. For the hotel and motel occupancy tax, we brought this up in I think all three of our reports now. The county's hotel occupancy tax is about 2%, which is quite a bit lower than the 4% to 4.5% that peer counties charge for their hotel tax. So we think it merits consideration to increase this. However, under the current tax rate, we would be concerned again about people not staying in hotels and motels as much, again, with a potential recession, that there should be some consideration to potentially reduce that projection going forward. Moving on to department revenues, again, we're saying this a lot, but any economic recession would impact department income, department fees, any usage fees that are going on. We felt the proposed budget mostly accounted for this. Most department levels were roughly flat, and we would agree with that. Moving on to expenditures. Unlike revenues, expenditures are more easily controllable, and they can be strategically increased or decreased to match the level of the revenue that's coming into the county. As far as department spending, we felt the proposed budget did a good job of appropriately projecting department expenses for the coming fiscal year. Most departments, we felt, were relatively flat in any expenditure increases. But there were a few items that did merit some concern, the first being fuel and power. Overall, for fuel, the 23 budget accounted for an increase in fuel costs, which we would expect given the inflationary pressure that's currently occurring. For power, however, there were some buildings that we felt took into account increased power costs, but others that did not. So that we felt that was something to be looked at a little more closely. And as far as expenses, we thought that the proposed budget did take into consideration the current economic conditions as throughout the budget. Lines for auto fuel, gas, electric, cleaning supplies were shown to be projecting increases, which we would expect. As we mentioned, a couple that we thought might merit additional review for some increased costs that we might expect in the coming fiscal year. As far as personnel increases, we thought the 23 proposed budget for personnel was appropriate to deal with public demand for services. One thing we did want to make note of was any additional unemployment that might arise from a recession could lead to an increase in needs for services for residents, and that might be something that comes across that requires additional personnel. As far as non-union management positions, so the county, the state does provide flexibility to reclassify certain positions, and the county could improve controls relating to the changes to make non-union management positions. And we thought there should be some internal review of policies and procedures for how that could be put in place. And our view of purchase orders was felt to be a little lacking in the county, that increased purchase order uses to make note of encumbrances throughout the fiscal year could lead to better oversight for how the budget is trending as the year progresses. Purchase orders will give you a bit of a better picture of monies that may be obligated but haven't spent yet, but of course are encumbered, so can't be spent additionally, so we want to make note of that. Next, for workers' compensation, this came up in one of our department reviews. There is a bill currently pending on the governor's desk that would increase the amount of workers' compensation due to employees currently on disability. We felt there was some increase built into the budget, but we thought that there is the potential for that liability to increase to a further extent. So in light of all of these economic pressures, a few things that could come in as far as expenses greater than budgeted, we always want to make note of potential contingency plans to avoid any issues if expenses do come in greater than expected. So we feel like that's something that should be discussed and should be built in for increased costs or reduced revenues as the year progresses. And lastly, as it relates to expenditures, as I mentioned before, we always do a budget to actual variance analysis during our review. And we found for the last several years, and I think we've noted this in our previous reports, revenues typically come in revenues are typically overestimated to an extent, while expenses tend to be overestimated. It ends up netting out more or less, but it leads to a pretty significant variance as far as budget to actual is concerned. So something that we think should be addressed. As far as fund balance, we had noted in a previous report for the need for a fund balance policy, and that has since been put into place. Something that the fund balance policy does not address is unrestricted fund balance. It generally deals with unassigned fund balance. So we would recommend an amendment to that to additionally put in policies and procedures for unrestricted fund balance. And in addition to that, for a tax stabilization reserve, in light of the potential economic turbulence, large surplus funds would be best suited for deposit into a tax stabilization reserve, and that could help the county to hedge against any expenditure overages, revenue losses in the coming fiscal year. And it's something we've seen other jurisdictions take advantage of and have success with. When looking at the county's debt, we noted that there was no formalized debt management policy in place, but we understand that development is in process, so that's always something we note as a best practice and something that should be put into place. We know that the county doesn't typically make use of cash flow borrowings, but always adopts a cash flow resolution, which is a best practice. It does allow for increased flexibility should the need for a cash flow borrowing arise, and streamlines the process, which we note is a credit positive. And as far as upcoming issuance of debt, we know the county typically does its debt issuance right around this time of the year. We just want to make note that as the debt is sold and coming onto the liabilities, that the budget's adopted to make sure that the correct interest and principal expenses are put into the budget as soon as they're known. As far as the capital improvement plan, we found that the summaries in the capital improvement plan exclude funding details, which we thought was an oversight. We also noted that from 2018 to 2023, spending estimates have been relatively stable in the capital improvement plan, but the proposed capital improvement program in the budget shows an increase of about 13.9% in 2021 and nearly 100% since 2018, which is significant. The last thing I want to mention is the American Rescue Plan Act. Under ARPA, the county's allocation was about $34.5 million. We know that the county has done a revenue loss calculation with regards to the first year of the ARPA program, but because it's allowed to do that on an annual basis, we think the county should take advantage of that. Having a revenue loss calculation that increases would give the county greater flexibility in the use of its ARPA proceeds, and it would also streamline any reporting requirements for those projects. So we think it's something to consider. So that concludes our presentation. We thought the findings and initiatives in the 23 review will assist the county to develop sustainable financial operations. And by a rough estimate, we thought the recommendations noted in the report would have a net impact of about $3.5 million. But some of those are, of course, estimates and would merit further review.
Thank you. Okay, we'll open the floor to members for questions. Legislator Roberts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You are asking us at this point maybe to cut the sales tax revenue in the budget line by $4 million. You've been with us for how many years now?
This is our third year.
Third year. Your prior 2 years, obviously you made projections. How did that pan out?
James, do you know how as far as sales tax specifically or overall?
No, your projections.
Sure. So sales tax, I know, you know, one of the primary concerns these last couple of years were COVID and what was going to be the impact. I think the recommendations that we had was to be kind of as cautious as possible. I think in Ulster County, the sales tax numbers, you know, increased, you know, pretty substantially, you know, kind of year over year. And there was certainly some large, you know, surpluses that were received as a result of that. What we're looking to do in, you know, the report this year is kind of highlight some of the risk factors again. Different than COVID, obviously, this time, but still, you know, we're kind of, you know, taking a step back almost to 2020. We're heading into this possible recessionary period. We're not, you know, 100% sure what's going to happen. We think there's some level of risk involved. You know, we're starting to see some of those sales tax numbers, you know, kind of dwindling down. And I think even with the conversations that we've had internally with some of the departments, they kind of generally agreed that there was going to be some level of, you know, risk associated with the upcoming year. So, you know, our approach to sales tax this year was we felt it most appropriate to budget probably what you received over the current fiscal year. Now, what's in the budget presently is one $167 million. We did include both in our print analysis and what you saw in this presentation a number. I think it was, what was it, Tom? 163.8 million. What I want to be clear on is, you know, we kind of tried to forecast out and look at, well, you know, kind of looking at some available data, is that kind of how we could land at the air? It's a possibility. There's going to be some additional information that becomes available over the next, you know, several weeks, perhaps over the next month. The budget's not being adopted tonight. So I think, you know, kind of the true recommendation there is to continue to monitor that. And as you get a little bit closer to the budget adoption period, you know, budget at what's going to be received for 2022. We felt that to be the most appropriate approach to sales tax this year. Len, I don't know, do you have any additional comment on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at where you are right now, through the end of August, you're ahead of your projection for the year. You're going to finish with more than what you projected 2022 budget. However, if you look at September, your September sales tax revenue collection is actually down compared to last September. So the question is that an indication that, you know, this current economic conditions that we're under, the higher interest rates, inflation, et cetera, is that starting to have an impact on sales and sales tax collection? So what we did was we took the collection from the last 3 months of 2021, projected that to be the collection for the last 3 months of 2022. So if you get in the last quarter of 22, what you got in the last quarter of 21, you're going to be at about 163.8, almost 164 million. We think that's a pretty good projection. It could be lower. Like I said, the month of September last year, your collection was lower. And if you look at Dutchess County, which is your sister county, your neighboring county, their collection for September went down by $4 million in September of 22 compared to September of 21. So we felt more comfortable with being conservative and basically saying, hey, you know, don't expect to get more next year than you got this year. And that's kind of how we based our analysis.
Can I follow up, Madam Chair? Since you did mention Dutchess County, I read in the paper today that their spending is going down, where ours is going up by $30-something million. What they do is obviously irrelevant, but do you have any comment on our spending going up drastically?
Well, do you want to take that? I mean, I could.
Yeah, go ahead, Len. I'll jump in. You go first, and then I'll pop in.
Your spending is reflective of, you know, if you feel comfortable with your revenue projections, and obviously you do, the spending, the increase in spending is more than covered by, you know, the revenue that you have predicted in your budget. Now, of course, we're questioning whether or not the sales tax revenue is a little over project. We're spending $3.5 million. If you go to the last page, $3.5 million is what you may need to add in spending in order to comfortably cover what you're proposing. So, I feel comfortable with the spend, you know, with the spending projections in this budget. I think they're in line with revenue. Like I said, we're talking about $3.5 million as part of a $378 million budget. There are ways to fill that $3.5 million. I mean, you've got a lot of capital projects proposed in the introduction to the budget, where you're going to take some of your reserve money or some of your unassigned surplus and create these reserves for these various projects. You can take a little money from each of those projected projects and maybe use that to fill that $3.5 million gap and make the slight changes that we've recommended in the report. For instance, I mean, I think there's one project, if you look at the list, there's $10 million proposed to be to be assigned to that project. I mean, the project looks like it's a very generalized project. I'd have to go back and look and see what it is. There's about 7 or 8 projects like that. If you were to take a couple of $1 million out of that project initially and not take it out of fund balance and rather apply it to appropriated fund balance, you could make up that, you know, $2 million of that $3.5 million recommendation of ours just by making that change. Doesn't mean you don't have to. It doesn't mean you won't spend $10 million on that capital project over time. But you know, at least initially, some of the money that you had earmarked for that, and use it to make sure that you have a solid, operating budget.
Thank you, Legislator Cahill.
Thank you. I have actually two questions. One is, did you make it, because as I understand it, there was a capital program entry into the budget as well as capital projects, correct? And some of that excess surplus funds was used for the capital program without actually identifying the capital projects. Is that a fair assessment of how the budget was constructed, do you think, Madam Chair? Do you agree? Or?
Well, I mean, if you're asking me,
yeah,
So my understanding is that what's proposed in the budget is that there are $70 million in unrestricted fund balance that's proposed to be assigned, and then subsequently, or in addition, in the proposed capital plan, they're proposing those assignments that he's referencing in the fund balance as future capital projects that I assume would actually become capital projects at approval from the legislature, but as has been stated at the previous Ways and Means meeting, may not even be capital projects.
Right.
So that
leads me to this next question when it comes to the really going back to the tax stabilization reserve, where the statement is that a large surplus funds would be best suited for deposit into the tax stabilization reserve. Would you suggest that some of those capital projects that have, I think it totals around $72 million in this budget, take a little bit of each, as you suggested, and put in the tax stabilization reserve, or just the $3 million that you found in savings overall in suggested cuts? Because there are, you know, for me, that $72 million seems like an awful lot of money to not have anything directly attached to it in the budget, right?
So I can jump in there. I think, you know, the primary recommendation is to make use of your tax stabilization fund. I think the true intention of that fund is to hedge against, volatility in the future. And we know, you know, all indicators, and, you know, you'll see in the written report, there's a number of sections, one specifically in the revenue section that discusses interest rates, the impact it can have, and some of, you know, the effects of it. Overall, you know, what that could do to your budget. And the most appropriate use, in our opinion, would be to make use of that tax stabilization fund for those, you know, for those large appropriations. I think, you know, there's other counties that you could cite that have processes in place that almost do this on a, I don't want to say automatic, but they have a process that kind of, you know, takes care of that. And if the funds go immediately into the tax stabilization fund and, you know, keep some level of control, by including in there. And there's a write-up in the report that I would suggest you take a look at, too, which provides some additional information on tax stabilization fund, kind of the benefits surrounding them. And, I think there could also be some linkage here to one of the other recommendations we had, and it's, you know, kind of addressing some of these factors within the fund balance policy, which I know, you know, has been reviewed, you know, a number of times this past year. And, you know, kind of looking at it, at both the unassigned and the unrestricted funds, I think there's some opportunity there as well.
You know, but I understand the question, and it kind of relates to what I had said earlier, and that is you have these – now I found this spot. You have these – like one of the proposals is a capital projects reserve, which reserves $25 million for existing future capital projects. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of broad, you know, a broad reserve. It's for a number of different types of projects. I think what the gentleman is saying is what I said earlier. You could probably take maybe, you know, a portion of that, a small portion, use that to fund your tax stabilization reserve, because that $25 million is part of the unassigned fund balance. That's what I was getting at when I said maybe you take $1 million or $2 million of that $25 million and you put it in your in order to decrease your sales tax revenue projection, but keep your basically keep your budget balanced. That would be a revenue source for that cut in your sales tax projection. So I think what the gentleman's saying is that you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 or 8 different projects that propose contributing various amounts, of fund balance to do these various projects, and maybe you take a little bit of money from each of the projects and use that for your tax stabilization fund or any other fund that you want to set up. You know, the General Municipal Code, Article 2, Section 6, has a whole list of different reserves that can be set up by the legislative body with all the rules attached in terms of how you set them up, how you appropriate money out of the reserves. And I would suggest maybe you take a look at those different reserves and see whether or not, that may be one way you want to go in terms of taking some of this unassigned fund balance and putting it aside for specific purposes.
Legislator Cahill, did you have another question?
I did.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So the second question, thank you very much for that answer. I appreciate it. The second question is when it comes to the expenditures and the purchase orders, and if I understand it correctly, we should be using purchase orders to establish our current encumbrances, where we are year to date. As a matter of fact, when we were presented with the budget, we just had the discussion an hour ago about this, where we don't know actually how much we have spent year to date. Do you suggest that using the purchase orders as a way of looking at our year to date spending would help us analyze the projected spending next year better? I'm trying to understand the overall reasoning for purchase orders in this presentation.
Basically, in looking at the budget, it has to do more with budget monitoring than it does budget projection, quite honestly. So I understand where you're coming from, but the budget document itself, and again, I think we brought this up last year, it doesn't contain a column for year-to-date spending. So when you take the budget document, it's 23, but and then you look at it. You see how much was budgeted in 2022. You see how much the amended budget was in 2022. And then you see what's being proposed for 2023. No column there that tells you what you've spent or what you've designated to spend year-to-date. There's no year-to-date column. And a year-to-date column really would make it a stronger document because you'd be able to look at that document right now and say, hey, we budgeted, $1 million in this line. We've spent or encumbered, $700,000 so far this year. We have $300,000 left. What are we going to do? What's that $300,000 going to be used for? Is it enough? Is it not enough? It puts you in a better position to evaluate where you are right now with the budget. So yes, the encumbrance, would have an impact on any analysis that's done of what you've spent year to date, what you have left, and whether you need more or whether you have enough to get through the end of the year. Most municipalities encumber their budgets almost immediately after they're adopted. In towns that I've worked in, the purchasing officer usually spends the first month of the purchase order request. The departments put in purchase order requests, processed, and then the money gets encumbered on the line. And if it's $1,000 you spent for the year, they'll put in a purchase order for $750 because they know they're going to spend that $750, and that $750 gets encumbered. So if anybody's monitoring the budget after that, they know that $750 has already been accounted for. There's only $250 out there to spend, as opposed to looking at it without an encumbrance, and you see the $1,000 and you say, you'll give me still $1,000 left. Well, maybe you don't because you committed $750. So you know, it's both good in terms of budget prep, having encumbrances in terms of budget preparation and evaluating your budget as you prepare for your next budget, and it also is good at also good for monitoring your budget during the current fiscal year.
Thank you.
I have Legislator Walter, then Legislator Maloney.
Thanks. I have two questions as well. The first is related to the non-union management positions. You recommend that practices related to these changes should be reviewed and internal controls should be developed. Can you just talk a little bit more about these internal controls, what you're suggesting?
Sure. So I think, you know, there is some level of flexibility that's afforded, you know, by the state. So, you know, the folks on the administrative side, you know, can reclassify some positions, they can make some changes, and I think at the end of the day, the recommendations, we want to make sure that everybody has, you know, a clear picture, and I think the way to do that is to set up some procedures or perhaps some, you know, internal controls to make sure that, you know, if there's decisions that need to be made by, you know, the legislative body or even by folks within the county, everybody has, you know, kind of a clear upfront picture. So I think that's kind of the true basis for that recommendation, is just kind of increasing that level of, you know, oversight, control, and transparency.
Sorry, just to clarify, so are you specifically saying those internal controls or policies basically that the legislature would be aware of and approve of any of those changes in advance, or does it go beyond that?
I think it goes probably a little bit beyond that. I think it's just that you have, you know, all of the proper information at your disposal to make future decisions.
Great. Yeah, any more detail you ever could provide on that would be helpful. And then the other question was related to the federal infrastructure money. I'm just wondering, you know, I hear that we should expect a good amount to in our county, and have you considered that at all? Do you have an idea of what we should be thinking is going to come down to us related to that?
Yes. There is some information. I mean, it doesn't specifically name, you know, the infrastructure funds themselves, but there is a recommendation in the document, which, you know, wasn't necessarily discussed in this presentation here, but I think, and it's a recommendation we've made, I think, in each of the last prior documents, and that's, you know, kind of centralizing your grants, you know, process to a degree. I think you've done portions of that, you know, with kind of some of the ARPA oversight, but it could probably be done better. And, you know, I think that would be likely a role that would be, you know, kind of fulfilled by a centralized, you know, group of people kind of monitoring grants, making sure that you're able to meet compliance and that things aren't necessarily, you know, slipping through the cracks. So there are there's information in the document in the review relating to that, and I would suggest, you know, reading the section that's specific to the centralization of the grant, you know, of a centralized grant process. And again, just to make note that you know, we have recommended that in each of the last prior two reviews.
Thanks. Just as a follow-up, though, in terms of the infrastructure money in general, do you have any sense of what will be on the table available to counties?
At this point, not necessarily. You know, they're kind of rolling monies out in, you know, different phases for different types of projects. So I know there's been some, I think, broadband monies maybe that have been made available at this point. But generally, overall, I don't, you know, we could do additional research into this and try to provide you with some broad or categories, you know, things of that nature, but I don't have anything at my fingertips right now that I could, you know, give you kind of a clear indication as to, you know, how much money could potentially come, you know, to the county for specifically what types of projects.
Legislator Maloney? Legislator Maloney, can you use their mic so that they can hear you?
With regards to excessive slack or padding in the budget, I've long thought there was too much of that. A couple of years ago, we stopped kind of fully funding vacant positions and fringe benefits for positions that appeared year after year, and that kind of got rid of a couple of million dollars of what we felt like was padding. You point out the expenditures constantly coming in. I think we talked about it last night with, I think, the chair of Economic Development asked about tourism with something like that, I think. Beyond that, so you're just basically suggesting we go through and decrease the areas that seem to be year after year of doing that? Is there any other specific things you've seen other counties do to curtail over, you know, basically hiding the money, over padding the budget? Do you have any other recommendations besides just going through and reducing expenditures?
Right. There's a table on page 52 of the report. I think you should, you know, probably go and take a look there. It does break down some expenditure categories. And what it shows is, you know, this is purely the expenditure side. There, you know, the revenue side is on page 51. You should take a look at that, too. I think the quickest thing that you'll notice is on the revenue side, there's a lot of red numbers, and that shows, you know, a negative variance. On the expenditure side, and this is looking over a five-year period, there's not one red number, which, you know, to some degree, you need some level of padding, you know, in your expenditures because, you know, there's going to be things that change in your budget. You need to make sure that you have, you know, appropriate levels of expenditures available. But I would tend to look at some of the higher numbers that, you know, historically that we've seen. So, you know, the economic assistance line, you know, looks like a, you know, year over year, this is, you know, accounts for maybe, I'm just eyeballing it right now, but probably close to, you know, 20-30% of the total, you know, the total positive variance that you've seen. So, you know, probably drilling down on some of those larger areas that are there, we could certainly, you know, do that exercise and try to drill down, you know, on behalf if we're requested. You know, for the purposes of this analysis, we had to kind of look at it, you know, at kind of that higher tiered level, but it does break it down, you know, by expenditure category. Len, I don't know, you have anything else that you would add to that, or?
Former town budget officer and controller for several different towns, I can tell you some tricks on how we used to pad the budget. I hate to admit it, but you had kind of touched on it. You know, obviously you put in positions that don't get filled, but what a lot of towns do is, for instance, in this year's budget, Ulster's budget, you have 42 new positions. Well, my guess is that those 42 people are not all going to be hired on January 1st. They're going to be hired over the course, probably the first 3, 4, 5 months of the year. I don't know if we checked to see whether or not those positions were budgeted for the full year or budgeted based on when it's anticipated the people will be coming on board. And that could be a really big number. Think about it, 42 people. If you hire 20 of them, a quarter of the way into the budget year, that's a quarter of their salary, that's a quarter of their benefits, you know, that have been, you know, that you basically budgeted for, that money that you didn't need. That's why you'll see, you know, you'll see black numbers in a lot of the, and a lot of the personnel lines at the end of the year, especially in those departments where you hired new employees. Again, like I said, maybe an analysis of the 42 new positions and whether or not they were budgeted by estimating when the people were going to come on board as opposed to just putting in full salary for the year with all the benefits for the year. I mean, that's...
Thank you. We could probably come up with that $4 million if we decided... to reduce the sales tax number with just tweaking expenditures and figuring out which positions aren't starting on January 1st. Another thing, which is not going to be your expertise, I don't know whose expertise it would really be, but we actually have a policy or a resolution in to raise, we're discussing raising the bed tax. One of the main things that gets brought up is, do we hurt hotels and motels? Would people not stay? Would there be less, by having a 2%? I don't think I'm asking you a budgetary question. It's more of your experiences working in other municipalities. Have you ever come across or discussed with them or heard from them that either they've lost business or gained business by, or is that ever a concern that you guys, it's not a concern for me, but I'm asking you, because you did not put it in there as a con, but that's something that a couple of legislators bring up sometimes.
Sure. Well, to start, I think the short answer is With the higher rate, you need fewer people staying at the hotels to reach the same figure. So even with a, if it's a, say a 10% decrease in occupancy, but 50% increase in the rate, you're more than making up for that.
That's from our point of view, but we don't want to hurt a business in Ulster County. So the, the question was, have you guys ever come across that? You guys may never have discussed it with a municipality or experienced that either way. I was just wondering because we're trying to figure out how to quantify that.
James, do you have anything to add to that?
We never.
In East Hampton Town, which is where I was budget officer for a long while, Montauk, the Hamptons, you know, there are a lot of hotels and motels in Montauk, and we used to get complaints. We didn't actually have a municipal occupancy tax, but there was a county tax, and there were some state taxes, and they used to complain to the town about the county tax, but I don't think anyone ever came to me and was able to prove that raising the county tax by a percent or two had any real impact on their occupancy. They still rented their rooms. Yours may be a little different because you might have competition with other counties as opposed to Suffolk County where you really, you have the ocean on one side and the bay on the other, so you really don't have a lot of competition. But no one ever really showed me or proved to me that raising the occupancy tax had an impact on their business.
When you say they complained, they was hotel owners?
Hotel owners. They did complain.
Okay. Legislator Erner?
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. You had some recommendations, as we were just talking about, around the occupancy tax. Did you do any comparison of our overall sales tax or even specific items? You may know that we had approved a six-month change to our fuel taxes. We're not extending that past the end of the year. As well as property tax, did you analyze whether we've granted all available exemptions that the state allows us to and whether that could entitle certain folks to those and then therefore adjust who's paying what on the property tax side. Thank you.
Sure. So we did not drill down to that level of looking at, possible exemptions, relating to real property taxes. It was done, kind of more on the general levy, basis. We could certainly be happy to take a look into that and provide you with additional information if that would be helpful to you. We did not look at it, at the level of exemptions.
Go ahead.
Exemptions, or are you looking for, tax assessment reductions where people, their taxes.
I'm looking more at the exemptions. We have a report in our executive budget on page 29 for the operating budget of all the types of exemption that are currently on the books.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there are quite a few.
All right, Legislator Nolan.
Thank you. Really appreciate the analysis. I'm wondering, in relationship to this question about having unfilled positions and your comments also about a fund balance or a stabilization fund, if we're talking around $4 million, it seems like that's basically 1% of this total budget. So one, is it really critical that we tighten up anything there? And two, are there ways for us to think about the advantages of putting that money that we think we want to say we have more of it conserved somehow into one way of doing that versus another? So that's the first question. And the second question I would have is, we've had some discussions about whether or not to bond for small and large projects, and I wondered if you have a position on that or a recommendation.
Lynn, you want to take that first part?
Let me take the second part first. You know, with interest rates going up, and interest rates will be going up on any debt you sell. I would try not to bond for the smaller items and smaller projects. And just the first question again was, can you repeat that one more time?
Yeah, there are places that you can in the budget kind of account for monies that you think might not come in, or you can try to conserve money to deal with contingencies. And you named some of them, but you didn't list them all together. So one would be, what's the list of the ways that municipalities generally do that? And one of them would be, you know, putting full year for a planned position, and then we know that that's not always going to be filled on day one, but by having that budget item, we could fill it if we found somebody on day one. So having unexpended funds there, what is the harm of that, and versus setting that same kind of level of funding aside as some other type of contingency?
Again, so your budget needs to be balanced, okay? So if we're saying that we believe you need to add $3.5 million of spending, need to reduce $3.5 million of revenue or some combination, in the end, your budget has to be balanced, okay? So if you reduce your sales tax revenue, say, by projection by $2 million, now you have to come up with $2 million of additional revenue, or you have to reduce $2 million in spending. So either your tax cut gets cut into, you could appropriate more fund balance. Right now, I think the budget calls for about $3.6 million on appropriated fund balance to balance your budget. You know, you could appropriate $5.6 million and reduce your sales tax projection by $2 million and do it that way. Or you could just leave it alone, and if you do come up short at the end of the year, you're going to have to appropriate fund balance. But the problem with that is that's going to kind of happen after the fact. So that's going to show up in your yearly audit. So when your auditors come in, they're going to say that, you know, that based on your adopted budget, your revenue didn't, your expenditures, and you have to appropriate fund balance after the end of the year, or you had to appropriate fund balance during the year in order to pay your expenses. So, you know. The easy answer is, yeah, you can leave your budget the way it is, and if you do not realize, you know, your sales tax projection or your occupancy tax projection, or if some of your aid gets cut, you do have a healthy fund balance, you can appropriate fund balance, and that's the way, you know, you would make up the difference. The best way, I think, it's the way that James has presented, and that is, you know, you create a tax stabilization and contingency fund, and so you basically ahead of time you've said, hey, you know, if we come in the red a little, we have this fund that where we've already put money aside because we've thought ahead, and now we're going to take the money from that fund and we're going to use it to make us whole for the year. Much better way to do it. Much better way in the eyes of your auditors, much better way in the eyes of the financial community, much better way in the eyes of the state controller. Wouldn't you agree with that, James?
I would, yeah. I think there's certainly, you know, a little bit more control. There's legislative oversight, you know, tax stabilization reserves, from my understanding, you know, require super majority vote. So it increases transparency. I think that's, you know, as Glenn mentioned, favorable. Looks, you know, as far as the rating agency goes, I think it's be looked at favorably. So I think there's a lot of benefits under that approach.
It's budgeting. It is what it is. I mean, you're people are looking for tight budgets. You know, you like to have a tight budget. You don't want a lot of padding in your budget, but at the same time, you don't want to come up short on the revenue side, or you don't want to come up on the long side of expenses. So having being in a position where you do have some extra funding, where you can create a reserve that can then be used in those emergencies, again, it shows some forethought and it shows some planning.
And I think particularly this year, again, there's some concern that we're going, depending on the information area, there's some information will say that we're in a recession right now. Other predict with almost certainty that we're going to be in a recession in 2023. So I think, that kind of even probably strengthens the case for this, because, the purpose of that fund is to generally, kind of hedge against, things like this, and to mitigate that level of risk. So, I think that particularly now kind of strengthens the case even more.
Thank you. That's exactly the kind of analysis I was asking for.
A lot of reason, in terms of potential for a recession and continued high rates from the Fed and unemployment. But I can tell you, I've also, I've talked to people from various towns, and I've read what various towns did in their budgets, because most towns have to have their budgets, their tentative budgets, in by the 30th of September. And everybody did their budgets with an eye towards a recession and fewer revenues, mortgage tax revenue. Everybody was really being very conservative in their revenue projections. I think you really just, we need to assume that there's going to be, the revenues are not going to be going up to any degree. Let me put it that way.
Legislator Criswell.
Thank you. I just want to go back to the conversation about variance. So in your report, you say a small annual variance would be appropriate. Can you quantify that? I mean, is there a percentage that seems like it would be appropriate? My concern is that we go back with red pens to departments and say your variance was 6% over and you've got to go and cut, cut, cut. So is there something that you feel is an appropriate variance?
Len, do you have you want to take that one, or you want me to?
That's a really good. I've been doing this for 35 years, and I don't think I've ever seen an actual number or a recommendation. Certainly, GFOA, GAAP. I mean, I don't ever remember seeing a recommended amount. You don't want to, 5%, and again, that's just me. If you're within 5% of your, I think you're doing a pretty good job, 5% or less, in the end. And that's the way you build surpluses gradually. The idea is not to build a surplus in 1 year. The idea is to do it over time. Through good budgeting and once in a while you have a good year wise and you put that aside, you put that in a reserve and you save it for when you do need it. But I would say 5%, but again, I've never really seen. Have you, James, or Tom, have you seen anything ever on paper?
No, I've never seen, in review, we review GFOA best practice, a couple others. I know Tom had mentioned in part of the presentation. Never seen a hard number on something like that. What I would kind of, think about as well is, you we're focusing really on that expenditure side, because that's where you kind of see this padding. You want to also keep an eye on the revenue, right? And, if you keep seeing these huge negative variances over there, that may be a little bit more concerning because, on the expenditure side, somebody I used to work with always used to have this saying, there's only so much meat you can cut before you hit bone. So if you start to see that you have these, expenditure variances that, on the positive, and you start really going the other way in revenues, you're going to drive into that. And at some point, you could come across a problem. And it's not going to be next year, probably the next several years, but at some point at a future date, When you start cutting through those, you know, those positive variances, you're going to have an issue, and you're going to see that, you know, could eventually cause some structural imbalance.
The place that I've ever seen a number related to fund balance really is state controller's office, where they restrict school district fund balances, unassigned fund balances, to 4%. So if school district, you're not supposed to carry an unassigned fund balance of more than 4% from one year to the other. So with the school districts, too, they just reserves. So if anything over 4% into a specific reserve, and that's the way they get around it. But that's like the only number. If you look in the law, the word reasonable is used. You know, a municipality is allowed to keep a reasonable amount of fund balance. That's the way it's worded. Never a number.
And I have a follow-up then. Is there an appropriate number of years look back to find that average variance over, you know, are we talking 4 years? Are we talking the last 3 years? Because there's also going to be, you know, each year is different. There's different circumstances that are happening in different departments. So is there something that would give you a better sense of just looking back a year or 2 years?
I think the standard would probably be like a five-year look back, you know, a little bit more than that. You know, it's good because it kind of shows you the trend. Maybe a little bit tough where we are right now because, you know, these past 2 years we had to go through COVID, which, you know, it kind of threw a monkey wrench into, like, kind of that traditional, you know, sense of finance. If there was money coming in different places, different ways, things were, you know, reduced in certain areas. So that probably complicates things a bit. But I think the typical look back would be, you know, for a five-year period. Do you agree, Len?
Yeah, I think so. And again, ultimately what you're doing is, you're looking at your fund balance policy, which you have a fund balance policy, and I believe it says 10% unassigned, and anything over that, you know, you assign it or you reserve, put it in a reserve. You know, once you hit your 10% unassigned, then anything above that, you know, you're dedicating. And again, the last place I worked with, the policy was 20%. That was our goal, was a 20% unassigned fund balance in each fund. Anything above that, we reserved. So, you know, if you go back 5 years and look, what you're really looking for is, you know, trends. I mean, if you go back 5 years, theoretically, and 5% is kind of your yearly goal, 25%. But what you probably have already done is, you probably have a 10% fund balance and 15% another different dedicated reserve during that five-year period. I would say 5 years, and you really do want to see positive numbers each year. You don't need to see the 5% if that's what your goal is, but you do like to see positive numbers. So the next question probably is, well, how many red numbers do you not want to see in a row before you really have a problem? And again, that would be tied to whatever your fund balance policy is. You should always try to be at that 10%. So if you see a couple of years of red numbers, then you've got to take some kind of steps to try to create some fund balance and get yourself back up to whatever your fund balance goal is.
Thank you.
Legislator Levine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gentlemen, very, very appreciated for the presentation. I just had a quick question regarding potential sales tax revenue. Obviously, it's an inexact science to project, you know, what we can be expecting from sales tax revenue going forward in 2023. But my question is in regards to, do you find any value in going back to the last pre-COVID recessionary period, and looking at what the projected census population of the county was at the time, and looking at what was generated in sales tax revenue in Ulster County, and then kind of extrapolating that forward to potentially looking at what the estimated population of the county is now, and going forward as if we had a similar type of recession, what we could be expecting in terms of a sales tax, a sales tax revenue to bring in if we have a similar recessionary period as to the last pre-COVID recessionary period. Do you find any value in that whatsoever? And have you done that, that data analysis?
I have not done that. I've not, done that data type analysis. I think there could be some level of value in doing something like that. And the reason that I say some is I think, we had discussions these last couple of years about COVID, and you can't look at recessionary periods as far as COVID goes because it's something that's different. But what came out of COVID is it's changed the landscape a little bit, kind of your tax base. People were coming up out of the city, and, there are some things that have changed. So, I think the answer would have been probably a straight, yeah, sure, that would make sense had we not had COVID, which has changed some of those landscape figures. But I do think that there could be, some degree of value. Len, do you agree, disagree?
The research I did over the last few weeks, I found some articles that talk about the current recession, and they do make some comparisons to what happened back in, 2008, which they consider the last great recession that we were in, with the banking bubble recession, where unemployment went up tremendously. I see professional economists making the comparison between, the potential for a recession over the next 6 months to 18 months and comparing that to 2008. So, I think if we could get the numbers, for 2008, 2007, 2008, 2009, see what the projection was and see what was actually received, that it probably couldn't hurt, probably give us some idea. But like James said, every recession has its own characteristics.
This is Margaret. You also can't just look at population. You have to look at outside people, tourism, things like that, that add to the sales tax. Right?
That's why every recession is different. I mean, see,
that's right.
That's why COVID it was so different. We recommended you be cautious last year, no doubt about it, because we weren't sure exactly how we were going to come out of COVID. And, who would have known that people were going to, just exit the city and head north and head east and head west and actually help the economies of some of those areas. 2008 might be a little more similar to what we might experience over the next year. I mean, like I said, it couldn't hurt to do it. But Margaret, Margaret's right. I mean, it's every recession, impacts the economic environment differently. But we could do it. I mean, James, it would be any problem getting those numbers?
Problem getting numbers.
And gentlemen, just a quick follow up point. Obviously, I know that every recession is different, and COVID changed a lot in terms of people fleeing metropolitan areas for more suburban and exurban rural areas. So I understand that. I didn't think it was a perfect analogy. I just thought it would be useful as kind of a rough template. But I also think in terms of, I don't know if, going back that far, if the data would be somewhat useful. But I see some correlation somewhat between what happened with COVID in this area of an influx of people from the metropolitan area. A similar thing happened, I think, in the 2001 recession after 9/11. You had a lot of folks come up, this way, and I think that there might be some usefulness in getting some data out of that as well, just because of the similar tendencies of folks looking to leave the New York area after 9/11. So just wanted to get your thoughts on that potential going back, you know, 21 years.
Yeah, I mean, we can do it. It's a good suggestion. Like I said, you know, you right now, if you look at the literature on the anticipated recession, the one we may already be in, you know, there are a lot of academic articles out there comparing what might happen to past recessions, you know, and but a lot of times I mentioned 2008. But I think, you know, 2001 and 2 would also be a good, you know, would be worthwhile doing. So, James, we put a schedule together.
Yeah. I think 2001, as you've mentioned, particularly with 9/11, your proximity to the city, you know, that draws, a comparison. So, and Len had mentioned this too, each one has kind of some unique characteristics. So I think looking at it from a regional perspective, you know, that certainly there could be some value.
Yeah, we do one, we do a chart for 2001, 2, and 3, and then we do one for 7, 8, 9, and we'll see how the projection matched up with what was actually received.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Legislator Green?
I have a couple questions also. The first one is with regard to the Inflation Reduction Act and how that might affect our budget. It might be in here, but I didn't see it.
I couldn't hear. I was having a hard time.
My mic is on. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. The Inflation Reduction Act, how might that affect our budget? It might be in here, but I didn't see it. Did you hear my question this time?
Anything in there, is there, James?
No, I don't think there's anything in the report relative to an Inflation Reduction Act. I think all data kind of points to, you know, kind of a continuation of some level of inflation, right, for at least the short term.
Because I did see information about ARPA and other federal funding, but not anything on inflation reduction.
At this point, with respect to the Inflation Reduction Act, a lot of it has to do with there's a lot of green spending in there, green projects, and I'm almost certain that there haven't been nothing has come out with respect to who's going to get what and when, because we would have seen that, correct, James?
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it.
Okay. This next question might be more of a procedural question than for the consultants, but I brought this up before. We're in the process of there's funding that's being expended on a feasibility study for a reuse innovation center, but there's not anything in the capital budget to actually implement. And I wonder if you, when you do your analysis, do you look at, oh, they're planning this, is there money in the capital budget to implement what they're planning? And you know, that's just a sort of more philosophical or procedural, but then I want to know, if there's not, how do we go about rectifying that?
If I can just jump in, gentlemen, and just answer the procedural part of that question. The executive's office at Ways and Means acknowledged the failure to put in the next phases into the capital plan. So I'm expecting that we'll have a sample amendment for the capital plan that can be sponsored by you, Legislator Green, and I'll co-sponsor it to put in to amend the capital plan to include the actual implementation of the project.
Yeah, and, you know, then just in terms of an analysis moving forward, it's probably a good idea to look at, to do that check and balance to be sure that the capital plan matches the feasibility and what is being planned over time. And the last thing, I agree that there's probably going to continue to be an influx of people into this area. And over time, I think that because of the climate crisis, and that's a little bit long range, but that timeline is getting shorter and shorter for when we're going to be seeing severe storm surges and sea level rise. And I think that is going to lead to a very steep influx of population. And I guess my question is, does this analysis take into consideration climate change at all? Is the financial industry taking that into consideration with regard to disaster planning and so forth?
I do, Tom, you can probably answer the second part of that question, but there are various, parts in the document which do, kind of touch on some climate-related, topics. I know we conducted an analysis of the Environmental Department. I think, there's a recommendation relative to, some bus charging stations, in the analysis. So it is touched on in there. I might kick over the second part of this to Tom, but it's relative to, the financial industry kind of taking a look at this. And I do believe that some environmental factors, particularly like impacts of storms, things like that, and I think you had mentioned this as well, storm surges are starting to be factored into, the markets. And, Tom, are you starting to see that, in the debt markets and things of that nature?
Right. Just to go back to your first question for a moment, the climate analysis that is included in the report is more on an informal basis that was brought up during the departmental interviews. So we did discuss some ecological, environmental initiatives that some of the departments have going on, but less formal and more so just kind of in context of how they're running the departments. As far as the financial markets are concerned, we are seeing more specifically the credit rating agencies starting to take that more into account when doing their evaluations. I think all three of the major credit rating agencies have started including what they call an ESG score, environmental, social, governance factors. Again, it's more of a qualitative than quantitative analysis when looking at, in this case, the county, but they are making that more of a note, and they do want to see you taking that into account as you start to put any plans into place or undertake any initiatives.
Tom, I can follow up on that.
Sure.
A little with respect to the rating agencies, because, like I said, I was the finance director for the town of East Hampton. And East Hampton is certainly in an exposed area with the Atlantic Ocean on the south, Long Island Sound on the north, and not much barrier dune left. The rating agencies, Moody's, in reviewing the town's finances and giving us credit ratings for our debt sales, the last 4 or 5 years before I retired, they certainly did have a section in there about how our reserve funds, which were high, we had pretty good fund balances and good reserves, that they were there, and it was important for Moody's to see that,
and they mentioned the fact that we were in an area very subject to storms and hurricanes and other types of natural disasters, and that was actually a positive for us. So so I'll echo what Tom said. The rating agencies certainly are beginning to look at those things and taking into account whether or not a municipality has factored in, some kind of financial position with respect to potential storms damage and climate change. So I've seen it.
Legislator Hewitt.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. When Legislator Green brought up the Inflation Reduction Act, I see in your approach and methodology you mentioned county resolutions and press releases. About 6 months ago, the former county executive, Pat Ryan, announced the County Inflation Reduction Act. He talked about lowering gas prices, removing bus fares. Is that why you included the county resolutions and press releases to do an audit of our claims?
That would be you. Oh,
sorry, I had the mute button on. No, I think that was, kind of just more a general, kind of example. We were indicating kind of the different items that we'll utilize to kind of inform our review outside of, the budget itself. And certainly, the news releases, things of that nature are one of the things that we'll, try to review as part of our process. It wasn't naming specifically that, that news release or just kind of an overall. These are kind of the things that we utilize to gather information to, kind of try to inform our decisions and the recommendations that we would have for our analysis.
Great. Thank you.
Legislator Erner.
Thank you. Two quick questions. On page 48 of the longer report, expenditure benchmark analysis for transportation, it looks like the per capita column might not have been sorted correctly. Is that the right ranking order, and we just need to sort those dollar per capita figures?
You said it was page 48?
Yeah.
Yes, I will. I apologize for that. That is my fault. I was the one that sorted them. They just need to be sorted. So go by the dollar value on the right. That is the correct dollar values. But you'll need to just kind of sort them from highest to lowest. And we can certainly do that.
Thank you. My second quick question is for page appendix B10, where you list employment by industry. Which category would farming fall under?
B10. So this is quarterly info from New York State wages. Farming would fall under. Might have to take a look. I think generally there's a further breakdown on the site that we kind of extrapolate this information from. So I would probably need to just double check on that site where it falls under.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments? Legislator Maloney?
I have two more questions. And I will say, if you actually reviewed all our press releases and press conferences, I almost expect an additional bill because that had to be quite time-consuming. With regards to bonding, I've been fiddling around. Have you ever seen a policy with regards in municipalities or other counties that you've worked with? Because something that when we have a bonding resolution, something you could plug the interest rate, the bonding rates, the return rate on the investment in, and see when it's beneficial or not beneficial to bond. Or do you suggest having more of an approach of anything below $50,000 or $100,000, don't bond?
I'm not aware of a policy that includes, kind of interest rate determinants. I don't know, Tom or Jack, have you ever seen any debt policies like
that? There's just a couple of basic numbers. I feel I've been you know, we've talked about it as a legislature. I didn't know if you've seen it or thought it'd be possible.
Yeah. To that point, we haven't seen any specific policies that take that into account. It's certainly a consideration that should be considered when bonding. As far as beneficial, I wouldn't expect your bonding rates to come in lower than your savings rate for the most part.
But what you get on that sitting money.
Right, okay. The spread on that should certainly be considered, whether you want to put a specific dollar or percent threshold is a policy decision, but we haven't seen anything that addresses that.
Okay, but just don't bond on vehicles and things that are small. My last question is, have you ever, we pass a resolution every year that basically, at the end of the year, basically gives our finance director carte blanche to go through and move money all over the place to fill gaps. Have you ever looked at the specific resolution that we passed every year and compare it? Is it similar to what other counties do? Is it looser or tighter? I doubt it's tighter. Looser than what other counties do?
James, do you want to speak to that?
I know we've reviewed that resolution. I haven't reviewed it in the context of, you know, kind of benchmarking it against, you know, kind of your peer, probably mid-Hudson counties would make sense. Certainly happy to do that, to see if they have similar policies, you know, kind of designating some authorities and, you know, maybe making kind of a list of what's designated by Ulster by comparison to, you know, some of these other counties. I don't think that would be a hard task, and we could certainly, you know, provide you with some feedback on that.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, there's no public comment at this meeting. We will have three public hearings, so this is for legislators only. Would any other legislator like to ask any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate the presentation. If anyone does have additional questions that arise after the review of the detailed document, please, we can work together with our finance department to get the questions over to you to be answered to CMA. I assume that this will be an ongoing process. There are three public hearings that are scheduled on the proposed 2023 Ulster County budget. The next one, it will be Wednesday, November 9th at 6:30 at the Saugerties Public Library, 91 Washington Ave, Saugerties, New York. On Monday, November 14th at 6 p.m. in the town of Warsing at the Town Hall, second floor courtroom, 108 Canal Street, Ellenville, New York. And finally, on Tuesday, November 15th, 2022, 7 p.m. in Legislative Chambers here, sixth floor, County Office Building 244 Fair Street. The next regular session of the Ulster County Legislature is that same day. Will be held on November 15th, also at 7 p.m. in Legislative Chambers, here, 6th floor, 244 Fair Street. I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Legislator Cahill. Seconded. All those in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
Opposed?